good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Interoperability Standards Work Group. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and we are always glad when you can join us. All work group meetings are open to the public, and your feedback is welcomed, which can be typed in the Zoom chat feature throughout the meeting, or could be made verbally during the public comment period that is scheduled at approximately 11:55 Eastern Time this morning. I'll begin roll call of our work group members, so when I call your name, please indicate if you are here. And I'll start with our co-chairs. Sarah DeSylvie.
Here.
Nuri Sundar Rajan.
Here.
Pooja Babra, I believe, is joining us a little bit later today. Shyla Blend. Ricky Bloomfield.
Good morning.
Hans Gutendijk. Christia Caraballo.
Good morning.
Grace Cordovano.
Good morning.
Raj Dash. Steve Eichner.
Sorry, good morning.
Nidra Garrett.
Good morning.
Raj Goparti.
Good morning.
Bryant Thomas Karras, I do not believe will be with us today. Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Hong Lu.
Good morning.
Meg Marshall. Anna McAllister. Glenn McDonald. Devin McGraw.
Present. Good morning.
Aaron Meary. Aaron Neinstein. PK Lamo Ocean Kenton.
Good morning.
Mark Savage is not able to be with us today. Michelle Schreiber. Shelly Spiro.
Good morning.
And Ram Charam. All right, good morning, everyone, and thank you. And now please join me in welcoming Sarah and Naresh for their opening remarks.
Greetings, everybody. It's my honor to kick off with my colleague Naresh. Our fifth ISWG meeting, our charge remains the same. We're gonna keep on working on the Google Doc. I appreciate everybody working asynchronously as you have before. Passing off to Naresh, any further comments before we commence our work today?
No, Sarah.
All right. Next, we're gonna be, the agenda is very similar to past meetings. Again, as we move through the first element of the charge, the new, reviewing the new draft USCDI v4 elements, we do hope to be able to have time to invite guest speakers, and we'll talk more about that as we go forward. But today, again, just reviewing the charge, going into the work asynchronously in the Google Doc, reviewing the timeline very briefly, which has not changed, and then entering into public comment. Next slide, please. Ground level setting on the charge, which we should be very accustomed to. Again, we are really moving quite well through our USCDI v4 elements. Hope to focus on the level 2 elements very shortly. So again, our 2 elements of the charge are to review new data classes and elements from draft USCDI v4 and discuss and center in on any level 2 data classes and elements not included in draft USCDI v4. And some of those are past ISWD recommendations, so we'll lean into those again in the weeks ahead. Next slide, please. All right, next slide. We're trying to make it clear communicate to the ISWG clearly the elements that we've discussed and really come to consensus on, and elements that are still a work in progress. And this is just, again, on the slides, as this can be public facing, and the work that we do in the Google Doc is internal to the ISWG when it's not in the meeting. We have moved through and clearly gained consensus on a few core elements. Some of the elements are work in progress, such as alcohol use, substance use, and physical activity, and we're looping back around on those. We'll continue to add other elements as we go forward, and just grateful for everybody's work. I do want to note just an update on the time of procedure element. very, very grateful for Hung taking leadership on that to gather some of the definitions we talked about at our last meeting. But given the short time frame, that little subgroup has not had time to meet yet, even though they have a time to meet in the future. And we look forward to hearing their recommendations on those definitions in the future. Very, very, again, very thankful for leaning into that work. So when we come back next week or the week after, we hope to hear back from that group on the consensus they've gathered in their subgroup. Any questions on this slide? Hans?
Yeah, just a brief question, Sarah. Good morning. If on the ones that are in green and we, based on further review, reflecting on it, and we have additional comments, do we just put them into the same column extended where we already had some comments, and then they will go into the recommendations if they're fine-tuning? Just from a procedural perspective, how do we address those additional thoughts for consideration? They would not change really the intent overall, but they would just give some more backdrop or clarification.
I'm going to attempt to answer that question, and I look to my friends at ONC and Naresh to fill in any gaps there. So my thought would be, based on precedent, we would include any comments that we want to include in our recommendation in that workgroup discussion if it's not changing the status of the recommendation, because that's where all the nuances and all of our different perspectives from our areas of expertise will come to bear. But if it changes the recommendation anyway, and if it's moving from consensus to some kind of concern, I would ask that you just elevate that by emailing Naresh and I and Mike and Al, so we can make sure that we focus in not on future meetings. Does that make sense?
Yep. Thank you.
Great. Any addendum to that, Mike or Al or Naresh?
Nothing from my end.
No. Okay. All right. Any further questions on this slide before we dive into the work? Sounds okay. Looks like we have a comment in the chat. Okay. Moving on. Next slide, please. All right. Next slide. And I believe we're going into the Google Doc, and Al, I believe, is the designated chair, and I thank him for that.
That is correct. Hang on a second. Let me get the screen going. And Rick, help me remind me where we are starting. Now.
We're getting there.
Hang on a second. Give me one second.
All right.
Slight thing. All right. Remind me again where we're starting, if you could.
If you can take us to time of procedure, and then we can start from there. Even though we're starting after that, that's a good level. That's a good grounding for where we ended up.
All right. So where are we? Wait, is time of procedure already up here?
So we're moving. Now we have to go down for, we want to sort by entry number now, unfortunately, because otherwise we're going to be all discombobulated. Okay, great. And we can go down through laboratory and time of procedure, then go to row entry number 17. I believe that's where we were. If I'm correct, because if you go past time of procedure again, that Hung and the subgroup are working on that. I do believe that we were, we left off here, if I'm not incorrect. We had yet to discuss, I believe, so actually row 17, go one more row down now. Entry 17, row 18, there we go. I believe we left off on medication instructions, if I'm not incorrect. Naresh, is this, and Al, am I correct in my?
I know we didn't discuss this yet.
Yeah, so that is, I believe that's where we are, because we had a really thorough conversation regarding the subtleties within time of procedure and considerations for different types of statuses that needed to be defined. And that's how the subgroup was created that Hung is so graciously leading. So here we are with entry number 17, medications. So at this point, just open up the floor to discussion on this element. Again, looking to lean heavily on some of our pharmacy friends who are here to make sure that we're in alignment with their concerns. Any thoughts besides what's conveyed currently? It looks like there's enough conversation in the workgroup discussion section of the Google Doc that it's not a clear go forward. Hans.
Sorry, I thought I saw Shelley pop up first, but either way, I think there are a couple of questions and clarifications because medication instructions could be interpreted a couple of different ways. They could be the patient-focused instructions. They could be the SIG. They could be as far as the pharmacist e-care plan. And depending on that, the scope and the complexity changes. If it's the medication instructions for the patient a simple set of text to clarify the information that is otherwise already available around dose, frequency, et cetera, there is already a wider use of that. It's not necessarily called out as a must support in the fire use core today, but those are fairly straightforward to consider. If on the other hand, and I'm going to go flip to the other side, if the intent is actually, because generally it's referenced in the submission to implement the pharmacist e-care plan, then we are looking at something more complex, less adopted, if at all, the typical HIT that we are likely looking at here. So that becomes a different perspective on is that viable for your CDI version 4, or should that be considered in the future when there's more maturity, uptake, experience with it, and then consider that level of instructions. So that's where I'm asking for what's really the intent, where on that scale are we trying to land?
Hans, thank you. That's very important. We're back to definitions here. Shelley, thank you for coming to bear with your wisdom here.
You're welcome. So medication instructions, and if we're going to codify medication instructions, many years, over a decade, we've been working through NCPDP for what we call a instruction codified SIG, or the instructions or the directions for use. And it is codified in LOINC. We haven't had adoption of that. So it has implications for electronic prescribing, for the medication administration record as it hits an EHR, both in the hospital and in the long-term post-acute care setting. When we talk about instructions, we are talking about the directions for use, which has regulatory requirements also. It is also a place where there is inconsistency when we're using text-based or proprietary coding, such as one tab BID, which has to be then interpreted on the receiving side from the prescriber to the pharmacy who is putting it onto the label. So there are many implications, and that's one of the reasons why NCPDP moved to a structured and codified SIG using LOINC codes to help standardize the directions for use. In terms of the pharmacist electronic care plan, as Hans has brought up, we don't use structured and codified SIG, but we do add the instructions for use in the pharmacist electronic care plan, because it is important when you're providing medication management services and evaluating the medications that the patient is taking. The directions for use is a critical point in what we're looking for. It's also linked to the indication, which has been previously been identified and is needed to be codified moving forward. And so the best point of codifying the directions for use would be to use LOINC.
Shelley, thank you. Stephen?
Yes, thank you. I just want to add, you know, from the clinical perspective, which of course many of us have, that this is incredibly valuable data. And frankly, to have medication data without the SIG or instructions, depending on which term we're using, really, really makes it very difficult. You know, as I noted in the document, having codified SIG elements is really ideal because it allows for decision support and analysis to be done to quantify, you know, daily dose, total lifetime dose, all sorts of important issues. But I think we need to clarify, you know, is this the medication SIG? Is it something else? I hope it is the SIG. That was my understanding in reading through what was on the website. And if so, is it going to be simply a free text field that would be analyzable, and or are we going to support some free text elements within that? I know a lot of these standards exist. I know I've been personally using, you know, discrete SIGs for well on a decade now in my EHR, but there are real challenges with getting that degree of specific data to transmit between different data holders, back and forth to the pharmacy, the PBMs, et cetera. So I would hope that as we include this, or hopefully include this in V4, that we're very specific as to what it is that we are expecting.
Stephen, thank you very much. Al.
So what we want to make clear is that a couple things. One is we recognize that codified structured SIG is an existing standard. It's not currently required even for e-prescribing through our certification program. It's available and if used and, you know, should be used according to that standard. But I just wanted to be clear that, you know, it's ONC's intent to capture other forms or other instances of instructions, including patient-reported, for the purposes, amongst other things, for medication reconciliation. So patient comes in saying, I'm taking over-the-counter pills, I'm taking herbal supplemental, and I'm doing some other thing on my own, and here's the way that I am taking that substance medication. It can be used for that as well. But where there is structured SIG, that would also satisfy the ability to capture and exchange medication instruction. So I think the subtext of that is because there's multiple different ways of doing it, some of them standardized, some of them not. We would want a broader, more general capability to communicate medication instruction, not according to any one specific standard, because there's more than one.
Okay, thank you, Al, thinking on that. Ricky?
Just to echo a number of things that have been said here, I agree how important this is. The way the definition is written in the spreadsheet right now includes two parts. One is the directions or SIG, but then it also mentions the package instructions for over-the-counter medications, which I think might even be a different field. And it raises the question of whether that would include things like medication warnings and contraindications. So I think it would be helpful for us to provide guidance on provide a little more specificity on what the scope of this request is. It's clear that one of the questions is whether this means a structured SIG, and I think we can certainly discuss that. If that's something that we decide to move forward with as a structured SIG, that's going to require a lot of conversation around how we would actually implement that. Might require either an HL7 work group or Argonaut or something to really dig into that, along with the support of those that have already done work with structured SIGs. But the free text SIG is already supported. It's not a must support element, but it is there. And we could also make a recommendation to make that must support in addition to the other items. I think no matter what we do with the structured SIG, having a free text SIG is always going to be necessary for some of the non-standard prescriptions, like sometimes a very specific steroid taper or something that you just have to write out freehand. It's not really going to fit well into a structured SIG. So I think there are a number of questions here, and I think it's up to us to decide how do we want to constrain this and what do we want to recommend for the next action item.
Ricky, yes, I hear you, and I note Hans's comment as well in the chat. Looking, Al, you have a comment?
I just wanted to respond to Ricky's noting about package instructions. I think one possibility would be a recommendation to change the definition or change the examples or the wording of the examples. And so it's a fair point because sometimes it's, you know, the package instructions include warnings, but maybe something along the line of dosing instructions as opposed to package instructions. If that sounds like a reasonable alternative to the definition, just as a suggestion.
Thank you. And it looks like we're moving on to Hans now.
Yeah, thank you for that clarification. I just want to make sure that I heard correctly, Dan, is that the intent of the proposal is that it is more the free text and possibly the structured SIG. And in that context, I would agree with the comments that that Ricky made. We can then sort out where within the dosage instructions that would live, but we can look at that. But that's it's then not necessarily the patient instructions around it that are in play. It is the SIG structured or unstructured. Am I hearing that correctly? That's because that level of precision in the definition is critical to mm-hmm. set the direction of how we're going to look at which standards are there, either a designated field already there, or that as Ricky indicated, requires more work given the standards that we need to use, even though that might be used in other places, we need to have agreement on how that is then fully expressed in the other areas.
Agreed, Hans. Al?
So I think that to answer your question, Hans, it's the intent of it is to convey how a medication should be taken, including how much and how much by what route, things along those lines. Just the general, not patient instructions per se, but the manner in which the medication should be taken or is taken. Could be patient self-reporting. I double my dose on bad days. Or I've been doubling my dose for 2 years. Things like that. That's different than the structured SIG, which is going to say one a day. A patient may say, I'm taking it differently. And so that's the information that needs to be conveyed. It's, again, with the eye toward medication reconciliation and other ways of communicating sort of what's actually being taken.
Just one clarification there, Al, if I may, is that the second part of patient reported, wouldn't that be more under the next topic of medication adherence, what I actually do versus medication instructions are what the provider wants the patient to do?
These two data elements are can be thought of as pairs, as kind of pair data elements. Like it's difficult to use one without the other because, for the intent. Now, you can use medication instruction as just, what's prescribed, what's a structured or unstructured prescription. You could pair those. You could say, so adherence is what is the patient doing relative to the instructions, if that makes sense. It could be, a patient could report, I've prescribed one a day, but I'm taking two a day, and that's some combination of instructions and adherence, if that makes sense. So you're right. You could say the instructions are one a day, and the adherence is twice a day. That's another way to do it. So it could be. It depends on how the patient's reporting it. If you don't already have a prescription in the computer to compare it to, you may not know that the patient is prescribed one a day when they tell you they take two a day. But if you do have the existing prescription in your system, and then the patient says I'm taking two a day, then you figure out how you document that in adherence, I suppose.
Thank you, Al. I guess I'm this is Sarah. I'm sensing a similar thing to time of procedure, where defining, like working with definitions. For these elements, we all agree these elements are critical, but working with definitions to be clearly detail what type of element we're speaking of, whether it be prescribed, reported, and adherence may be an important subgroup, as again, just as we did with time of procedure, because it sounds like we can all agree that these elements are important, but we have to maybe work on our definitions. Shelley?
Well, I've been a pharmacist for over 47 years, and the directions for use are very clear, also linked to regulatory requirements by state boards of pharmacy across the United States, and is part of what also a prescriber does and a pharmacist has to interpret, and which can lead to all sorts of adverse drug events that take place if it isn't clearly read, clearly understood by the pharmacist, who then does instruct the patients. It's also linked to structured product labeling when you get into over-the-counter types of items. And so maybe a SME from National Library of Medicine's structured product labeling in Daily Med clearly gives indication of what is required within the package insert. So your information that you're interested in relationship to non-prescription types of medications are also clearly identified. And one of the reasons why at NCPDP, we worked for so many years on a structured and codified SIG, where using WOINC, we were able to build 99% of, and I can't remember because it's been such a long time, of all the directions that could fit into both prescription and non-prescription use. Again, we're talking about a computer interpreting the directions for use, which would then go into common language. So all of that is been identified by the FDA under structured product labeling. I think this is doable, but we have to start with the coding first. Right now we have free text, we have proprietary coding systems that interpret what is being communicated between care providers and their patients in their technology that they're using. I believe that this is doable. We've had structured and codified SIG for an awfully long time as part of the suite of e-prescribing standards that come out of NCPDP. And this is just one that we haven't had the push for adoption because it does take a lift to actually put it into use. We still are using proprietary text-based codes in things like the fire resources, such as the care plan. Also, under the pharmacy work group, and I would recommend hearing from the pharmacy work group of the directions that fit into the electronic medication administration record or the MAR. And so there are several ways that we can move forward with this. Directions or instructions are instructions. I think what we're talking about is codifying the data. The data can be codified. We prove that within NCPDP. It's just a matter of putting some regulatory requirements to adopt it for patient safety purposes.
Thank you, Shelley. Understanding the regulatory drivers is always very important. So thank you. Grace?
I guess I'm trying to get a better understanding on currently these medication instructions using this form and format. Do patients see it anywhere? For example, if you go to the pharmacy, you get the little printout that accompanies a prescription that may have been filled. Is that part of the information that we're talking about here, or is that different from a pharmacy standpoint?
I'd be glad to answer that if you'd like me to.
Shelley, you do seem suited to. That'd be wonderful. Thank you.
Okay, so there are regulatory requirements for pharmacists to provide natural language or common language to the patient's takeaway type of documents. Some of them are structured in a way that follows structured product labeling and also company's proprietary use, but they're pretty standard as to the instructions, including the warnings and the, but it's all interpreted in common language. What we're talking about is, in terms of codifying this information, is allowing the technology to move data from one person or from one entity to the other, point A to point B, and assuring that that text-based information is not going to be interfered with or misinterpreted by another machine on the receiving end. And that's one of the reasons why we want to codify the data and make sure that it is used, that we're using a code. We determined that LOINC was the best way to do that. And most of the work over the last decade plus has been in terms of codifying using LOINC. SNOMED also does have similar type of coding that is available, but for US-centric, I would recommend the use of LOINC. What you're talking about, Grace, is more in terms of what is the common language that the machine has interpreted as what has been codified. And there are many ways with intrasystem to do that. Of what you're receiving.
Thank you. So thank you. So I guess what the misunderstanding on my end is medication instructions from a patient perspective is very different from what's being codified. I don't know if there's a way to clarify that data element or even the way that we're describing it as a definition here.
Grace, you seem to be picking up on some of the general comments. So for what I hear from us right now, and again, I'm going to make an attempt to synthesize given no one's hands are up, is that there's general support for focusing in on the element of the signature, right, within this data element, right? There is general support for free text as a common method of documenting this, with support for exploring codified documentation in the signature, right? So this would involve a simplification of the definition and an initial statement of support for free text elements. And I see a lot of conversation regarding exploring what it would look like to include the codified elements, but that may be, it's just something I see that's kind of a work in progress akin to other elements. So does that seem like a fair summary of where we are with this data element?
This Hans, I think so. And I think there are still a couple of open questions because the range in which this could be described, I think it's narrowing down a bit. I clearly understand it's not the pharmacist e-care plan full IG. It is something of a number of data elements, but it's not clear what exactly that is, that there is a clear understanding that if we say, yes, move forward with this, is it one field? Is it five fields? What exactly is that? And that might be helpful to still get a little bit of understanding. I put in the chat because I noticed that Scott Robertson is on the line, which is great. Is that to have a sense of what is that delta that we are talking about? Is it a couple fields, or is it a substantial amount that will be a much bigger lift? I don't think we have that insight in this group yet to understand that. So it will be great to get a little bit more insight before we finalize.
Right. So then it seems, I guess I'm going to offer, so one of the options is to ensure that we have people invited to come and help us talk through all the implications of this, right? That's one of the things we could do. We also could do a similar pathway that we did with time of procedure, which is have a subgroup go out and kind of deep dive into some of these elements in return. But I I feel like maybe both might be helpful. there definitely seems to be a sense to work on the definition. I see a note that inviting Scott as a guest speaker to the next meeting would be helpful if he's willing. Pooja?
Yes, thanks, Sarah. And I apologize, I'm late to the call. Yeah, I had included in the spreadsheet, I think Scott would be, if we can, I know we were looking for community folks. So I'm okay either taking this offline and helping lead probably a small group on this, or we could invite Scott to one of the upcoming meetings. I'm okay either way.
Because we do have a fair number of meetings, let's take an action. Let Shelley, the pharmacist, speak first, but I hear an action to invite Scott to the next meeting. Shelley?
Yeah, I totally agree with inviting Scott. Scott has, as the co-chair of the pharmacy work group at HL7, has been involved in structured SIG for a long time and followed it a lot longer than I have. Would be a great asset to solving this problem and identifying where we need to go forward.
All right, so that's a good, we really have done a good job fleshing out the considerations for this data element. We have an action item to invite Scott to come to a future meeting, and we will reach out to him after the meeting to make that happen. Any other final comments?
Yeah, this is Stephen. I'll just say, I think anything that we can do to assure that at least the free text SIG and ideally some components of the structured SIG move forward into V4 will be very helpful for patients and clinicians.
Yes, I do hear that emerging consensus as well. I think I hear a desire to simply explore some of the implications of doing that. But I do, as I mentioned a bit earlier, I think I feel that consensus within the group that will be more clarified when we invite Scott back. All right, work in progress, inviting Scott as a guest speaker to a future meeting for further discussion and to hear his expert perspective on the structured element. That means we move on. And again, please, everyone, document as much as possible of your thoughts that you have on this matter in the workgroup discussion so that we can ensure they're captured for posterity's sake and included in the recommendations that we send back to high tech. This is the best way to ensure all the things that we bring to the table are included in our final report. On to adherence. Opening up the conversation for medication adherence. Shelley.
Thank you. Well, you brought up medications today, so you're going to get me. for medication adherence, and this is just a little bit of background. This is a huge issue in terms of pharmacy and is related to a lot of the quality measures by the payer side to assure that the patient is adhering to their medication. Most adherence quality measures today are based off of the dispensing claim as to when the patient picked up the medications. As a pharmacist and as a clinician, we look at medication adherence to assure that the patient not only understands the medication, but draws out, are they actually taking the medications? There's a good example of a patient that was seen by the VA, and the VA preceptor brought students to the patient's home so that he was a good example of how to administer an inhaler. And he did really great and everybody was fine. And then the patient asked the preceptor to go to a drawer to pull out something and found all the inhalers there. And he asked, why was the inhalers not, what, you were such a good patient, we thought you were taking. He said, well, I didn't like the way I felt, but I wanted you to come back so you can talk to me. And so adherence is not just a matter of, was the medication dispensed? dispensed, but is the patient really understand and does the patient actually adhere to the regimen? And that's a primary role of the pharmacist in this process. So what we've done in terms of adherence with the pharmacist's electronic care plan, as we're doing our consultations with our patient and doing the clinical documentation, have identified several SNOMED codes and value sets that are kept within the National Library of Medicine's VSAC and are documenting adherence using SNOMED. So again, this goes back to the definition. Are we really talking about adherence to the medications? Or are we talking about a quick way to check that a medication was dispensed? And so in terms of being a pharmacist, I'm going to say adherence is more in assuring that the patient understands their medication and there is feedback into assuring that they are taking their medications, not just filling a medication, giving it to their friends, selling it, whatever else they would do, or just not taking the medication.
Thank you, Shelley. Pooja?
Yeah, Shelley, that was a helpful explanation because I think this ties into the conversation we were having at the last meeting about provenance, right? And understanding who's actually reporting the adherence. I had noted in the comments, I'm a little concerned about, bringing this one forward for that very reason. But I think if we're clear in our definition that it's more around the education to the patient, which I think, when you talk about medication adherence, it's, there's actual measures you can do, but again, based on claims, right, of did the patient pick it up, have they been picking it up every month versus did the pharmacist have the conversation with the patient? So I think that's where my concerns come in about recommending this one. So I think if we do recommend on moving it forward, we have to be very clear about what this means and who's actually reporting it.
Thank you so much, Hans.
I'd like to echo what Pooja just indicated, that we need to have that clarity on what is really the scope and the focus on this. Because if we're looking at what it would take to move that forward, there are three, I'll just use FHIR as the context. There are three different concepts that can be used to do that. And depending in the setting that you're in, inpatient setting, outpatient, is it prescribed, patient picks it up at the pharmacy. So there are three different places, the administration, dispense, or a statement by the patient that can be involved. And the last aspect of that, is this meant to be as recorded and understood by the clinician on what they understand the adherence to be? Or is this meant to be recorded by the patient and then conveyed into the record as the patient sees it? If you go to the latter part, we also then get, when we're talking about data for interoperability, we're starting to very quickly move in the direction, are we starting to talk about patient writing from their apps or otherwise into the system in some fashion, which then addresses a topic beyond querying information that's there. So I think it's like the prior one, the specificity of the definition is critically important to ensure that it's translated correctly in the next step of the process. And I don't think that's quite there yet. And depending on where that lands or where that's intended to land, the complexities of what that takes from a development of the necessary profile standards, that may not be totally there. Yes, there is a vocabulary there, but that being there versus understanding where that fits, how that all ties together, that may require more or less work depending on where we land. So I think this is another one that needs a bit more work to understand that before we can make a clear recommendation, other than it's maybe immature, it needs more work before this can move forward. So perhaps USCDI version 5 might be better, but it depends on what's really the intent behind this.
Hans, thank you so much. Anna, welcome, and your thoughts?
Thanks, I've just been here for a while, just sitting in the background. I guess I would concur with Hans and Pooja in the sense that it's not clear to me what the intent and what the use of this might be. Again, putting my patient hat on and speaking very much from there, the word adherence is a bit of an emotional trigger because I'm extremely adherent with each of the 16 medications I take if I can get them, even though I have very good insurance for which I pay $1,400 a month in premiums. The amount of effort and the completely, you know, arbitrary changing of the formulary each quarter makes it nearly impossible to actually be adherent with very, like, this is diabetes meds. It's not, you know, an aspirin. So if I think if we're going to talk about adherence, we need to provide the context for adherence and be very clear that we're not codifying something that condemns patients for which patients have no responsibility. There are other factors involved. So is the goal here to say, I just don't understand what the goal is. Obviously, adherence and understanding whether or not a patient actually does take the medication as intended is important, but I don't think that that fact in isolation tells you much about what's actually happening with the patient and the factors that contribute to whether or not a patient could actually be adherent.
Very important thoughts, Anna. Thank you, Ricky.
I don't know if I'll have too much new to add other than just to emphasize the points that have already been made. Hans's point about the different ways this can be modeled, using FHIR as the example with medication administration, dispense, and statement. The way I read the request, at least in the spreadsheet, says medication is consumed according to instructions, does leave quite a bit of ambiguity. And so we need to determine that. I think the other important point here in terms of how the data would be modeled would be whether we're talking about adherence in the home setting with self-administration or adherence in the clinical setting with where dispense is a key part of that. But to Anna's point as well, whether you can access the medication is also important. And the medication administration resource, which is not included in US Core right now, has a lot of detailed modeling that those points can be expressed, but it's not something that has been considered as deeply because it's not yet included in US Core. So I think if we move forward with this one, we should put together a set of general recommendations and guidelines for the specific scenarios that we wish to see. So that we can make the guidance clear in terms of what would need to happen as the next steps here, because there are so many ways this can be sliced that we really need to be specific.
Thank you, Ricky. Al?
So again, we wanted to be clear that the intent of this, really at the heart of this data element, is conveying information about whether or not the patient is doing or taking something as understood by the electronic record. So you have a prescription, right? And you even have a fill. I mean, in Anna's case, she may not have one of her prescriptions, her fill status, which is one of the USCDI version 3 data elements already, may or may not be dispensed. And so if it's not dispensed, obviously it's not going to be taken according to directions. But if it is dispensed and the patient says, I'm not taking this according to directions, or I am taking it according to directions, that is really the core. And so this at its core is a patient-reported piece of data, because unless you're talking about the inpatient setting of medication administration, which is a very specific, you know, form of medication taking, the information is whether or not the patient's taking, and so that's going to come from the patient, especially in the outpatient setting, and so it's how we structure it, how we define it, and the applicable standards that we use or don't use is really important. We tried to convey just that simple part of is the patient taking medication? And going back to medication reconciliation, there's a list that's provided to a patient typically, and you make an indication as a patient who's done medication reconciliation from both sides of the table, both sides of the desk. A patient is given a list, and the patient is set, and you say, are you taking, not taking, or what else are you taking? That's the kind of data captured during medication reconciliation, and that's the intent, is to take that step from medication dispense. So pharmacy handed patient medication. Got it. That's closer to is the patient taking than was the patient prescribed a medication. But it doesn't say, you know, what's being taken right now, so that everybody has a clear understanding about what's the pharmacologic mix the patient's, you know, dealing with right now. So it is a patient reported data element that's captured by whomever captures it. And not dispensed and not prescribed, but it is about actually taking.
Thank you, Al. I just want to note there's some, again, the helpful conversation in the chat. Grace?
I just want to point out that my concern is that the intent of medication adherence should not lead to further opportunities to really blame or potentially stigmatize the patient for not taking their medications as prescribed, especially when they may be facing significant barriers, whether they're social determinants of health, whether they are struggling with treatment-related side effects or disease progression that requires other quality of life adjustments. I feel that this is not capturing enough. So I just want to understand, is there an opportunity to focus on what happens with that no? Because it's the no response that really leads to a answer, whether it's connecting with community support, whether it's connecting with a financial assistance program, whether it's connecting with palliative care. So I'm still unclear. I'm very well aware of the importance of medication adherence, but what is the intent, and do we have an opportunity to shape something more powerful and more actionable by the way that we define what is important in this data element?
So Grace, it's a good point, and we were super sensitive to this idea. It's absolutely not, there's no reason to gather information just to shame a patient. It is about to provide more information to the providers about what the patient is taking. It's like a full medication history, and answering no to medication adherence only starts another conversation. It changes the approach. It changes the clinical approach. If I assume you're taking a medication and treat you as if you are, I could be doing something that could be harmful. Because I assume that you're taking the medication because you went to the pharmacy and you picked it up, you know, 2 weeks ago. But adherence, you know, provides more information. Oh, you're not taking it, so we don't need to adjust your dose. We just need to somehow support you taking it. So the answer to that question may sort of, it just opens up a new approach, but definitely not. It may not be enough to say, why not, if you're not taking it? And that's reason not taking is a different concept, and it's actually a concept that some people would be interested in seeing as an additional data element, and especially in the quality, in particular in the quality measurement, where quality is measured based on whether a patient, you know, takes a medication, for example, what's the clinical response to taking a medication. But reason not is a separate data element that could follow, that could follow from, you know, getting the medication adherence information.
I'm going to go to Shelley again, just to attempt to summarize. I hear differentiation between medication adherence status and medication adherence reason or why, right? And I hear some conversation regarding whether we go forward with this until we've added the why, given the possible downstream effect on patients of documenting adherence in the absence of the cause, especially if the cause is outside of the patient's control. Shelley?
Well, I'll address a couple of comments that have been made. First off, to Al, the Pharmacy HIT Collaborative, we did an extensive evaluation of what we call reasons for discontinued medications, which includes safety, indications. All of those are codified in a few value sets within the National Library of Medicine's Value Set Authority Center. Within SNOMED, we added some clinical terminology. So we have already built the framework for reasons for discontinued medication, which would be the second part of what both Grace and you had brought up. So we do have codification. It is being used within the pharmacist's electronic care plan as part of the medication reconciliation process and part of the consultation and encounters that pharmacists are clinically documenting within the pharmacist's electronic care plan. It is highly adopted in the independent community pharmacy setting, where millions of care plans have been generated and are being captured over about 2.5 years of time. So we do have that ability. When we're talking about, and I'll address some of the comments that are in the chat, in terms of adherence, you get into some smart pills that are out there to assure that a patient is adhering to their medication. So when you don't have a clinician like a nurse or a medication assistant recording that a patient actually took their medications, that we see that are documented in medication administration records, in assisted living, in long-term care, in hospitals, in methadone clinics, in jails. So there are different aspects of how we assure that the patient, the medication wasn't just dispensed and handed to the patient, but there are tools that are out there to assure that the patient is actually consuming the medication. And that's where we get into adherence. And as I said before, we have SNOMED codes and value sets for adherence, both on the education side and on the aspects of helping us educate and assure that the patient, through consultation, is adhering to their medications, understand their medications. And so we use these tools. Well, of course, we'll use the fill status as an indicator, just like we do for other indications that the prescription was actually filled. We do look at, is it continually being filled? But there is an aspect of, even though you're filling a medication, it doesn't necessarily mean that the patient is adhering to their medications. There are several apps that are out there. I use an app myself for the medications that I take to record when I took those medications, very similar to an electronic medication administration record that can be reviewed by clinicians. And we have to think about those aspects of some of those apps that are out there today to assure that the patient is actually consuming their medications.
Shelley, thank you. Pooja?
Yeah, I think this may be more a procedural question. I mean, we're calling this medication adherence. But is it, like when I heard Al explain, right, this, if this is patient reported that yes, are you taking it or not, is that truly medication adherence? And are we causing more confusion by calling it adherence? Is it possible to change the name of the state element if that's what it's, I guess I'm just unsure, how this came about is its actual adherence, because I think this is where, again, I'm struggling because there's so many aspects to adherence, and what we're kind of defining this as is not necessarily adherent. So is it possible to maybe change the name of the data element to what we're, what we're actually talking about?
I'll say that we went through several iterations of what name to use, what name to give this, and we felt like the best combination was instructions and adherence to instructions, for example. as opposed to sensitive to the misuse of data, misuse of the term adherence or lack of adherence. It's not really the scope of USCDI or Certified Health IT to address misuse of data that's collected and exchanged. That's more of a practice, sort of practice survey. But adherence, I'm totally open to a different word because we started with compliance and thought, and there was many at ONC that thought that compliance was a potentially aggressive or not a very it was a little sensitive to use the word compliance, but we thought adherence because adherence is a term that's used. It's not necessary. It just, we thought it was a better term, but if there's a better suggestion for a better term, we're all ears. And I just note that even though, as Hans pointed out, it's not currently supported in Fire 4 or Fire 4.5, there is modeling around medication usage and adherence in Fire 5. So at least the modeling is getting laid down now. And adherence is the term that's used in that model, at least at this stage. So, but any other suggestions, we're wide open to it, you know, in the form of a recommendation from the HITECH on a different, better word use.
I'm going to let Stephen speak, but I also want to note that we have a couple conversations about elements that are rolling into the next meeting, and Scott just piped in as well, and I was already wondering whether if noting some of these elements and some of the definitional conversations we're having both in instructions and adherence, whether we can pick up this when we come back next week with, again, inviting Scott to come to the table. Stephen?
Yeah, thank you. I think that we need to keep in mind that perfect is going to be the enemy of good here. And I'm so excited to see that ONC has proposed bringing these two key medication data elements forward. And I think that while there is so much depth and so many different, you know, sub-elements and pieces of this that could be included, I hope that we can move forward something in these areas. I can tell you as a clinician that when you're doing med rec, it's so important to know, is the patient taking this medication or aren't they? You know, and are they taking it the way it was prescribed pretty much most of the time, or are they taking it some other way? Those are really the top level questions that go into med rec and can contribute to patient safety and appropriate prescribing, et cetera. Again, I don't think we're going to be able to swallow this, the whole elephant here, but if we can at least move forward these, you know, fairly open as they've been defined in the document, these new data elements, it would move us in a good direction. And then as we are able to use these basic elements and learn more and add additional standards over time, it'll just get better and better.
Thank you for that perspective, Stephen. Shelley?
Just wanted to let you know that I added to the chat a paper that was written by a group of folks through the Pharmacy HIT Collaborative of why standardized codes to capture discontinued medication reasons are needed. We did an entire framework and identified missing codes and have gone through the process with SNOMED International of getting them added in. We haven't updated this, but it's on our roadmap to actually update the document with the newer codes that we've put into the National Library of Medicine for value sets that are in there now. As I said before, this is being captured in the FHIR version of the Pharmacist Electronic Care Plan.
Thank you, Shelley. Grace?
I just want to say I appreciate Stephen's explanation and rationale to move something forward, but I think we also have a great opportunity here to push the envelope on what would be the best intent and bring the most value. And from the patient and care partner perspective, compliance and adherence often lead to patient blaming, patient stigma, And we have a great opportunity here to connect more dots. So if in the recommendation somewhere, we can say we would like to acknowledge, how do we get value from an answer that's a no? How do we pull in other aspects such as social determinants of health, treatment-related side effects, quality of life, to really make this a more robust exchange of information that will really help the clinician and patient ultimately?
Grace, it's a really good point. And I wonder again, I see some of these comments going into the work group discussion. Noting the patient-centeredness and noting the conversations regarding social terms of health, which of course I'm I care personally very deeply about in my role at Gravity. It is very important, regardless of the outcome of our recommendation, to ensure that those critical patient-centered elements are in that box, so we can work them into the final recommendation. Any other thoughts on this right now? So again, we have a couple. We know we're going to come back to instructions, inviting, hopefully, our friend Scott can come next week and further the conversation. And then we do recognize an opportunity, even if, so what our conversation has led us to is that medication adherence is as clearly discussed here, which is the taking, not taking as a first step that needs further exploration about the why of the not taking, whether it happens now in UCDIV4, we recommend it for next year in UCDIV5, we have some options there. But do we believe, is our conversation on this matter right now come to a natural, thank you, Scott, come to a natural conclusion so we can move on? Any other further thoughts on adherence at this time?
I was trying to find my mute button. So will we have then a smaller group, or are we then indeed first having a conversation that I believe you indicated Scott might be able to do? What's the next step in that regard to help refine this further?
Even though we have time, maybe we do need some help with the definition revision for instructions, right? So maybe that can happen in a small subgroup or prior to the next meeting, but we also could just wait and see what happens when Scott comes back. I do want to note, so Al, thank you, that there already seems to be a negation rationale in level 2 that we could recommend elevating. So we can explore that at this time, or explore that at the next meeting as well. So I hear maybe a quick huddle prior to the next meeting to ensure at least that the definition regarding instructions is clear, because we did recommend winnowing that. Having Scott come back next meeting and picking up the conversation. Hans, does that sound good?
That sounds fine, yeah.
Okay, Pooja?
I was gonna say, I'm happy to help coordinate a small group if we wanted to do that, but it sounds like, if we wanna get that small group and then bring it to the next meeting, I think that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. All right, thank you so much, Pooja. That's very helpful. All right. So those are action items for both the previous medication instructions and medication adherence topics. Again, please do try to include any of your really thoughtful comments in the workgroup discussion so we can eventually include them in our final recommendation. I believe we are ready to move on. And I'm just noting that given that we were, if we go on to entry number, here we are in treatment intervention preferences. So we were going to hold some of the conversation on preferences for when we could have members of the ecosystem come and join us. But I think it might be appropriate given we have about 15 minutes left. If we initially open up this conversation, I'm just going to note that these are some of our final USCDIV4 new draft elements that were part of our charge. So we have a lot of action items, further conversations on some of the elements we've covered prior, but we are close to working through the initial part of our charge, which was at least reviewing all of the USCDIV4 elements for the first time, which we've done good work over the course of the last 5 meetings. So what I'd like to see Knowing that these treatment intervention and preference conversations may need community stakeholders is a brief conversation regarding these two elements and really action items on who we might need to have come and talk to us regarding these the two new preference elements that would be housed under goals. Does that seem like a good use of our time for the last 15 minutes? Because we do know that there's community members that have thoughts regarding this, that there's experts on preferences that we can bring to bear on the conversation, but we just need to know who to invite. Does that sound like a good use of our time?
That sounds great. And then the facility is similarly, that's also, you already, I thought, had identified some people to talk about that. Okay.
Yes, we did. So facilities and preferences, sorry, I popped over that one. We did identify significant a nod to Nedra and the conversation from the CDC. And I know that the CMS also has thoughts on that. And so we were looking to really lean into those conversations in the middle of next month. And we could ensure we had adequate representation from those groups after talking briefly about facilities and the public health linkages. I think it was last meeting or the meeting prior. All right, so initial thoughts on treatment intervention preferences, these, you know, entry number, I think it's 19 and 20. So we have, we have treatment intervention preference, entry number 19, and care experience preference, entry number 20. I'm going to let Sheila speak and then yes.
Yes, I just have a question for clarification. So as I read the side, you know, it's lumping in a lot of different things. Is this complicating it that these should possibly be separated out, or is there a reason that they're all in one? Because I see things such as, you know, resuscitation status and, you know, priorities and advanced directives and a lot of different things mixed together. So I'm just curious about that.
Sheila, you hit upon concerns that are really robustly represented in the conversation, in the work group discussion element on the shared drive right now, right? That perhaps not about the importance of the elements themselves, but about their placement. And so I'm going to nod to Stephen here.
Sorry, unmuting here. Again, I think I'm going to keep reminding us that that we could go so deep with so many of these data elements and add a level of complexity that will end up not being acceptable to the ONC or manageable by our community. And I think it is so important that we move these things forward. I think ONC has really attempted to thread a needle here with allowing important things to move forward, kind of like what we did with version 2 and some of the SDOH data elements. It's like we didn't get everything, but we got a lot, and the industry has really responded and embraced that. So I agree, there's a lot here. We may want to refine it or narrow it. We may want to extend it with additional level 2 data elements. I had the one question that I put at the top of the comments, which I'd love ONC to respond to, which is it seemed like there were two different level 2 data elements and that you brought one of them forward here in this suggested element in draft B4, but not the other. And I just was trying to understand that logic and how we got here.
I wonder, before we go to Hans, if you can answer that question.
Sure, yeah, thank you. Stephen, I appreciate your support for ONC's attempts to advance this kind of data. And to your question about advanced directive observation, so this is sort of a procedural thing that happens as we develop data elements for USCDI. New data elements are based on submissions by the general public, not, you know, out of the blue ideas that ONC comes up with in the middle of the night. And so we need to, when we look at advanced directive observation, there's two parts to this. One is advanced directive observation is a component of the overall advanced care planning process. And the observation is sort of a particular snapshot about a particular type of advanced directive. And advanced directives generally thought of as those things involving, sort of critical care things and life-sustaining care, things like, you know, DNR, DNI, tube feeds, et cetera. So the component of that and advanced that those two data elements are modeled after in the CCDA templates. But the observation is a component, and within that component is a preference that informs the decision about these interventions, like CPR. The original submission is called Advanced Directive Observation, and we recognize that as a component to an advanced directive. But we felt like it helps convey the differences between treatment intervention, between those goals, the goals, your preferences and priorities, related to those interventions versus related to general care experience. That's why the two data elements are in there separately. Treatment intervention preference better conveys the component of advanced directives that addresses what a patient wants related to that, as opposed to an order for DNR, which is separate, or a medical power of attorney, which is, you know, which does contain the wishes, but it's separate, or like a document level expression. So that's the reason that we elevated advanced directive observation, because it was a component of those treatment interventions that are addressed, and then the separate issues around care experience preference, which are not specifically around those potentially life-sustaining interventions, but more just general things like religious preferences, and you know, who you want in the room with you when something happens, and those kinds of things. That's why we split them up into two different data elements. It's two different categories of goals, preferences, and priorities. So that's the answer to one question. And then I just wanted to address the goals, preferences, and priorities term or phrase. That is a phrase that's used in some advanced care planning models. They're sort of synonymous. I would say that goals, preferences, and priorities are all synonyms of each other, or may sometimes convey slightly different information, but are really synonyms. It's a well-used phrase in the advanced care planning process, and some of the models that are currently in development and in use uses that phrase.
Thank you, Al. And again, I just want to note that when it comes to things like definitional elements, there are so many experts in the ecosystem, such as an NCQA. So if we have ideas regarding who can help us dive deeply into these two final elements, in addition to facilities, and I know we're also inviting the folks from Physical Activity IG, please just let the Mike and Al and Naresh and I know, and we can make sure that we invite them to future meetings. Hans?
Thank you. Yeah, a couple of observations and considerations on these two kind of overall combined. I think like some of the other discussion, they are presented initially as data elements, but they, in the submissions and in some of the discussion, point to larger implementation guides that are much more comprehensive than singular data elements, which yields that same question that has been raised already, is that what exactly is the area of focus? Is it indeed a couple of specific elements, or is it the larger concept, which then at time, like for example, a treatment intervention preference, it is effectively becoming its own data class with a variety of elements of interest over time or immediately. So I think it's tremendously important to have that clarity, because between the definition that is stated and then you go to the submission, in this case, in these two cases as well, it is unclear what is the scope that is really being proposed for V4 specifically. In this particular case, some of the suggestions might be is that treatment interventions, it's not really seemingly, depending on which part you read, about goals, but it's more about activities that you prefer or not prefer to occur. And that may be limited to advanced directives in end-of-life situations, but it may include other activities during the delivery of care, if we take that statement in the submission more generally as it's written, then might encompass a variety of other activities or procedures that you may or may not have a preference to be performed, even though it may not be an end-of-life situation. So the spectrum gets either very wide or very specific. It's not clear what that is. But by also considering some of these separate data classes, of which we might want to address one or two initial elements that can grow over time, would be very helpful in understanding how does this progress. To take a very specific aspect of it, why some of the challenges then can occur when it goes from a USCDI to standards and support. It is of interest to note that in the CDA-based guide that's already published, and in the corresponding FHIR guide that's not yet published, that in one guide they are being managed as observations, and in another one they are managed as goals. So are we aligned? And then there are other discussions that say, well, they're really not either. They're something else. They are statements about things you want to happen or not. And they become done in that vernacular, they become service requests. So there's a variety of different aspects of here that if the initial scope and focus is not clear, the understanding of what needs to happen in particularly CCDA and FHIR US Core as the supporting standards becomes very challenging, because we need to look at other implementation guides that have a greater or lesser extent of maturity, but they need to blend in with the CCDA and FHIR US Core in the current certification regimen. So those are the challenges, particularly with these two that as well that come up, that really would be helpful to be very focused on specific data elements or classes on what do we want to do as step one, because the submission right now makes it wide open and very large, which it sounds like is not necessarily the initial intent.
Thank you. We have 2 minutes until public comment, Shelley.
Yeah, I'll try to be quick. I've got 35 years of experience in the long-term post-acute care setting. And this is an area that we deal with in terms of transitions of care. And maybe that's the suggestion that we bring forward, that we have a data class in relationship to transitions of care. The treatment and intervention preferences are very important to exchange during that transitions of care process, especially into the post-acute care setting. I would recommend Dr. Terry O'Malley and Dr. Holly Miller, who have tried to streamline the preferences portion, especially on interventions and treatments that are important to exchange during transitions of care that also lead into the care planning process. So that would be my recommendation.
Thank you so much, Shelley. Any other final comments before we go to public comment? Again, this is a conversation that we'll continue to have over the course of the next month. Yes, and then just a note, Pooja, to the work done at PASIO as critically important. All right, it seems we are ready to transition to the public comment.
Great. And thanks, Sarah. We're going to open up our meeting for public comments. If you're on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you're on the phone only, press star 9 to raise your hand, and once called upon, press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. So let's pause for a moment to see if anyone raises their hand. All right, not seeing any hands raised, but we'll keep an eye on it. And in the meantime, I'll turn it back to Sarah and Narish to close us out.
Thank you so much. Next slide, please. Oh, we can go back to the slide deck. All right. We have a fair bit of work ahead of us, but we did it. We did accomplish a lot today, and I'm very grateful. So we have an assortment of different experts we'll be inviting into future calls. All of the looking again to go deeply into facilities, kind of in the middle of next month, and also bring in colleagues from the care preferences ecosystem. Shelley, I got the names Terry O'Malley and Holly Miller. Looking forward to make sure that I have the correct. I do know Holly Miller from the VA, but want to make sure that that's the correct expert that you mentioned. Looking forward to bringing in elements of folks from the PASIO project. We have two different subgroups. We have the group working on definitions for time of procedure, and we have a subgroup that's led by Hung. And then we also have Pooja nominating herself to lead a small huddle on the two different elements regarding medication instruction definitions and medication adherence thoughts. Hopefully that, you can reach out to Pooja directly or again to the ONC if you want to be part of either of those groups. And then just a note that we're going to try to make sure that we finish our recommendations in not too long. Hans?
Thank you. Yeah, just a quick question on potential candidates. Last year, we had also a view from the team in HL7 that takes the USCDI and then moves it forward into the next version of CCDA and FHIR US Core in particular. Just as a suggestion that may be helpful as well to get a sense of how big, small, sideways the suggestions might end up being, to have that context as well, if of interest, but just wanted to indicate as something we've done before.
Hans, that seems like a very good idea, and noted, and I will bring that into the discussion with the co-chairs. Also, just want to note that we do still have to focus on level two elements of consideration, including ones recommended by the ISWG in past years. So hopefully you're going to dive into that work in future meetings very shortly. Stephen?
Yeah, I just wanted to give a plus one to Han's suggestion about inviting the HL7 team that needs to make our aspirations a reality in the implementation guides and the standards. And in fact, I think we may want to plan ahead every year to include that in our planning for this work group, because it really is enlightening to understand that we are partners with them in terms of moving things forward. And if we don't understand the challenges they face, it makes it hard for us to make useful suggestions.
Stephen, that sounds wise. And a nod to my friends over at HL7. All right, so I think we are ready to adjourn. There's a fair number of action items for the co-chairs and ONC to work on. Again, no new clear absolutes today, but there's a lot of really good discussion. And the good thing is we do have a fair bit of time before we have to submit our final recommendations. So grateful for the team for actually going through all of those new data elements, at least briefly, and touching upon them over the course of the last five meetings. I'm looking forward to seeing you again. Naresh, any final thoughts?
I do not have any thoughts right now, but great conversations right now. And we have captured pretty much all the discussions, and we'll follow up with more homework.
Thank you. So see you next week, friends.